From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, in for Marty Moscoen. The numbers are in from Harrisburg, and the good news is no tax hikes. The bad news is more big cuts for higher education and other areas. Those are some highlights of Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett's second annual budget address yesterday.
Today I bring before you a budget grounded in difficult realities, but framed in the optimism that we are solving our problems. Once again, revenues do not match mandated, escalating costs. That means we must continue the course bravely charted by this assembly in the year just passed. I am submitting to you a budget proposal that is at once lean and demanding.
And while the governor describes his $27.1 billion plan as lean and demanding, he says it's necessary to close a shortfall in the $500 to $700 million range. So this hour, we're looking at the governor's plan from two perspectives. Nathan Benefield is the director of policy analysis for the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives. The foundation crafts and supports free market policies. Nathan, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you. Good morning, Tracy.
And also joining us is Sharon Ward. Sharon is director of the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center, and the center is a nonpartisan statewide policy research project that provides independent analysis on state taxes, budgets, and related policy matters with an eye toward the impact on working families. Sharon, welcome to Radio Times.
Good morning, Tracy.
Well, let me begin by asking each of you to characterize the governor's budget address and what you thought about his plan. Nate, we'll start with you, and then Sharon, your assessment.
Well, I mean, we think that this plan takes into context the landscape Pennsylvania is currently in, and we've kind of put this in kind of this really a four alarm fire facing Pennsylvania, not only in the past but going forward, with growing debt payments for debt we've accumulated over the last several years, pension payments for both state workers and school employees, which go up quite a bit in this budget and will continue to grow in future budgets, dramatic increases in what we're paying for pensions, having delayed those costs for many years. The corrections budget has grown dramatically over years, and Governor Corbett's budget really freezes that with some reforms that have to happen to slow the growth in correction spending. And then in public welfare has been the other huge increase in spending over the years, now the largest share of the general fund budget, and really Governor Corbett's budget made some cuts in welfare in the areas they have discretion over, but you still see growth in medical assistance, which is really tied to federal funds coming in there. But overall, it holds the line on spending without raising any taxes, and really it doesn't really have very much in the way of new initiatives. You often saw under Governor Rundell lots of new programs. He really didn't talk about too many new programs coming out or new initiatives.
Sharon, what did you think?
Well, I'd have to say this budget looks very much like the budget of last year. It is a budget that is really blind to the concerns of middle-class families. It once again imposes a very large cut to colleges and universities, 20% for colleges like Westchester and 30% for Temple. It really ignores basic education. School districts receive very large cuts last year. I know the city of Philadelphia received a cut of more than $400 million. The governor, curiously, did not address that at all. And finally, again, this is the third time we've seen a budget that takes aim at tens of thousands of the most vulnerable Pennsylvanians. The budget would cut the general assistance program to about 67,000 people, and there seems to be a theme of cutting health care. We've seen the loss of adult basic. We've seen medical assistance cuts so that 88,000 fewer children are receiving health care, and now these 67,000 individuals, many fewer would be receiving health care. And what you said in the introduction, Tracy, is that the budget won't raise taxes. The reality is that it will. Last year's budget raised taxes at the local level. We saw it in Philadelphia. We saw it in surrounding counties. So what the governor does is to continue the process. It's a fiction that Harrisburg doesn't raise taxes. They simply pass costs on to local governments who, if they want to protect the services and who are closer and see, you know, the real individuals who are affected in daily lives. You know, and finally, we think it's just bad for the economy. I mean, I think the governor is undermining Pennsylvania's economic growth for the long term, and it looks like his vision for Pennsylvania is Mississippi in the 1960s. You know, forgettable colleges, no funding for education, you know, poor student performance, and high poverty and low income, and that's really not the direction I think most Pennsylvanians want to go.
Nate, what do you say to those concerns that on the one hand we need to have, you know, fiscal responsibility, certainly, but on the other hand, there is that concern that many of the most vulnerable citizens are taking the hardest hits here?
Well, I'll answer, you know, a few of these concerns. You know, Sharon has talked about higher education, you know, they're going to have to raise tuition, that school property taxes are going to go up. Well, quite frankly, school property taxes went up $3 billion in the last 8 years, when the state was dramatically increasing state subsidies for public schools. Schools were still increasing property taxes. There's really not a connection between state subsidies and school taxes. They have been raising taxes. And what really is driving that, part of that, what's driving that, is the mandates the state has on school districts as well as the federal government. That really wasn't addressed in Governor Corbett's budget, but there has been a push in the last year to relieve school districts of some of those mandates. The main one of them is the prevailing wage mandate, which increases school construction costs as well as at the state level. But for school districts, giving them the opportunity to opt out of the prevailing wage mandate, which tells them they have to pay more than the private sector pays for the same construction work, freeing them from that would substantially give them the opportunity to save money and spend money more efficiently in the classroom. Higher education, she points out, you know, all these universities are getting their state subsidy cut. The state subsidy is really a small portion of the overall budget of schools like Penn State and Temple. It's worth pointing out that last year's tuition increase at Penn State was the lowest in 10 years, despite these cuts. Tuition has gone up dramatically at these schools, regardless of what the state subsidy is. In fact, there's good evidence that taxpayer subsidy of higher ed has actually resulted in an increase in tuition and incentivizing those tuition increases.
Well, I'm glad that you brought up higher education, because certainly that was one of the big points that the governor made, and certainly there are a lot of people who have some very strong feelings about that. Sharon, what do you say about that? This is the second year in a row that we've seen potentially pretty large cuts. What do you think about that?
Well, I think a couple of things. I just see that it's a really curious logic that the way to avoid local property tax increases or tuition hikes is to cut funding. It certainly has not worked that way. I think the evidence suggests that the result is just the opposite. And, you know, what we've seen across the nation is the same situation as we've seen here in Pennsylvania. Last year, public colleges actually raised tuition at a faster rate than private colleges because of cuts to the subsidy. So that's just not going to work. Again, you know, there are two very competing visions about what it takes to help support families and economic growth. And, you know, I think the evidence is pretty clear that the centers of innovation in this country are in Silicon Valley and the Research Triangle and around Boston. They all grew up around colleges and universities. We've got Temple, we've got University of Pittsburgh, we've got Penn. They are the engines of economic growth, and what the governor is doing is taking an axe to them. And what we're seeing instead is handouts to corporations, and essentially really bribes. And what we've now seen is over $1 billion of tax cuts that were instituted by both Democratic and Republican administrations now that just haven't produced jobs. You know, we hear a lot about job creators, but the fact is they're creating jobs in China, and we're cutting their taxes so they can do it. So I think that's a failed policy, and I just don't see that reducing the education levels of our kids or cutting our colleges and university is a road to prosperity at all.
Sharon, were you surprised that the governor quoted President Obama when he talked about higher education and said that if the universities can't, you know, stop raising their tuition, then they're going to get less money from taxpayers?
Well, I think that, Governor, I think that what I actually wasn't surprised at all, but what President Obama did was talk first and cut later, and Governor Corbett's done the opposite. He's cutting now, and then he's going to pull together a group to talk about what should be done with higher education. And, you know, again, I think as somebody who's just graduated my last child from college, I'm certainly as concerned about college tuition as many of the listeners are, but cutting tuition or cutting subsidy so greatly and on second level, some colleges are going to be at a 40% cut, really is a recipe of nothing more than high tuition increases and closing college campuses, and I don't think that's very good for our economy.
Nate, Sharon brought up the whole idea of jobs creation, and that has certainly been a big point. Talk about that and the fact that there are not new taxes. There's for business, there's been a lot of outcry, on at least on one side of the fence, about corporations getting off easy. Is that because they are job creators? Are they getting off easy? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think there are really two aspects to what Sharon said, and part of it is the grants and subsidies to corporations, and part of it is lower taxes. You know, we have always been come at it from a free market perspective, and that's not always as viewed a big business or defending corporations. We believe in lower taxes for all Pennsylvanians, making Pennsylvania more economically competitive, and so we support the phase out of the capital stock and franchise tax, and which is a tax on business assets. It's very harmful for manufacturers, and Pennsylvania is one of few states that has both a tax on profits and a tax on capital. And this was, implemented, I think started under Governor Ridge. Governor Rendell supported the phase-out. So we continue to hope that continues to go and make Pennsylvania more economically competitive for businesses and job creators. Hmm. The other side of it, though, is the grants and subsidies and corporate welfare programs. And we have strongly opposed all of those. We don't want the government picking winners and losers. We don't want crony capitalism of handouts for favored companies. In fact, right now, Governor touched on one reform, and I know there's a press conference right now talking about a bond program, the Redevelopment Assistance Capital Program, or RCAP, and reforming that. This is where the state borrows money to hand out to projects across the state. A lot of money for sports stadiums. There was money for the Tasty Cake headquarters, money for the Arlen Specter Library, and a lot of these projects. We would like to see that eliminated and use that money. The money they borrow should be dedicated for roads and bridges and other things that government should be involved in rather than handouts to corporations.
Well, Nate, you've given us a lot to talk about. Sharon, we've got about 30 seconds. I know that you wrote an op-ed piece where you talked about corporate taxes from a different perspective.
Sure. I think really two things. Pennsylvania now is a leader in corporate tax avoidance. We're one of the few states that lets companies ship income to Delaware and other tax havens without lifting a finger to do anything about it. It could cost enough money to Pennsylvania that could pay for colleges and universities and help to support education. So that's not the kind of leader that we want to be moving forward. And, the governor announced in his address yesterday some funding for a General Electric in Erie, and this is an example of the problem with corporate taxes in Pennsylvania. During the year that Pennsylvania taxpayers gave money to General Electric, they earned about $5 billion in profits and paid not a penny in federal taxes.
Sharon, I'm going to stop you right there because we have to take a quick break, but I'd like you to pick up with that when we come back. We're talking about the governor's budget plan from different perspectives. We'd love to hear your perspective on it when Radio Times comes right back.
Supporting WHYY, Mendelssohn Club of Philadelphia continues its season with Unfinished Masterpieces, featuring the Mozart Requiem and Schubert's Unfinished Symphony. Joined by acclaimed orchestra Symphony in C, conducted by Rawson Milanov. Sunday, February 12th, 7:30 p.m. at the Church of the Holy Trinity on Rittenhouse Square. Details and tickets available online at mcchorus.org.
I'm Marty Moscowane. It's the winter membership campaign. We're thrilled that you listen to WHYY. Now take that next step and become a supporter. 2012 is going to be a busy year politically speaking, and Radio Times and WHYY will keep you up to speed on the local and national races and informed about the issues. That's what we do. What you need to do is make a pledge of support right now by calling 1-888-345-9499 or pledge online at WHYY.org.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY. Doctors at Penn's Depression Research Unit have been studying the causes and treatment of mood disorders since 1964 and are currently performing research to develop improved treatments. Symptoms may include mood swings, low energy, and low motivation. Initial evaluations are offered to determine those who are eligible for treatment. More about Penn's Depression Research Unit at 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowane, and we're talking about Governor Corbett's proposed budget. He released his plan yesterday, $27.1 billion. Pretty lean. In fact, that was the word that the governor himself used to describe it. He said it is a lean and demanding budget, but a necessary one in order to help get Pennsylvania's fiscal house in order. We are talking with two guests who represent very different perspectives on the budget. Nate Benefield is the Director of Policy Analysis for the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives. Sharon Ward is the director of the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center, and we've been talking about some of the highlights of the budget. We'd love to hear from you as well. The number is 888-477-9499 if you've got a comment or question regarding the budget. And also, we're trying to answer a central question, which is, what should the role of government be? Is it to protect the most vulnerable? Is it to promote business? Is there a way to do both? What do you think the central role of government ought to be? So we'd love to hear from you on that. You can call in and ask our guests, Nate and Sharon. And Sharon, when we left off, we were talking about corporate taxes, and I had to stop you for a break, but I'd like you to pick up where you left off, if you would.
Sure, I'm happy to. You know, even as we speak, there's a House committee that's considering a bill to give a tax break to deer processors who donate the deer meat they process to charity. Now, those deer processors are already getting a tax break in forms of their charitable contribution. But this is an example of an abuse of the tax code that we're seeing in Harrisburg, where our lawmakers are really just doling out tax credits like favors. It's not going to create any jobs. There are very few, it's affecting very few people. So we've really seen sort of this abuse of tax credits and tax reductions. Another example is a highly touted tax break that the business community has been asking for. It's just changing the way corporate income is apportioned or how it's attributed to the state. And the truth of the matter is that it only affects some businesses. A business that's Pennsylvania-based doesn't get anything for that tax break. And in fact, there are more companies who pay more in taxes because of the so-called tax reform. Yes, yet it drains dollars from the Treasury. And, you know, one of the big beneficiaries of this break was the Hershey Corporation. Did the Hershey Corporation create jobs? No. They fired their workers, and then, as we all know, they hired a bunch of students who paid money to come to the United States to replace those workers. So, you know, we need the same kind of scrutiny for tax cuts and tax breaks that we have for spending programs. And the governor really has turned a blind eye to examining the cost-benefit of these tax breaks. We just don't see the jobs for $1 billion worth of tax breaks.
Nate, I'm going to give you an opportunity to respond to Sharon's point, and then we'll move on because we have lots of ground to cover.
Well, I think there's common ground here that we both oppose these targeted tax incentives that are breaks for specific companies or even groups of companies. You know, the film tax credit being one that we have written about quite a bit, that's, you know, picking and choosing winners in the economy rather than a tax code that benefits all Pennsylvanians. But Sharon brought up the case of GE, and I think that's an interesting one because she's talked about how, well, they made big profits but didn't pay any taxes. But I wanted to run through some of the reasons why they've had big profits and not paid taxes. GE got 14 grants from the Stimulus Act. They got $139 billion through the bank bailouts through the FDIC. They got millions for high-speed rail programs. They're getting subsidies for fuel economy mandates for their battery plants. They're getting tax breaks because they are producing wind power. So the alternative energy tax breaks that they get, they're getting lots of tax credits for that, and that's how they're able to avoid taxes. At the same time, they are shutting down plants in the U.S. because of the incandescent light bulb ban and moving those overseas where they're fine with, because they have plants in China producing the fluorescent light bulbs. But the thing is, those are all policies that Sharon and her group has supported. These are corporate welfare things that big government programs have had the opportunity to make these handouts and give these credits for what they think is, you know, green jobs or good programs. And GE's been one of the biggest recipients of these big government programs. And I think this is a big distinction between Sharon and I, that we don't want these handouts for any corporation or any type of economic activity, whether it be green jobs or high-speed rail. We need to end corporate welfare in its entirety.
Well, you mentioned welfare, and two things. I want to circle back to education for just a moment, and I do want to talk about right-sizing the welfare system, which is one of the points that the governor made yesterday. But first, as far as education is concerned, I want to talk a little bit about K through 12. I know that the funding has increased a tiny bit there. Sharon, is it enough to really help some of the distressed school districts? I'm thinking about Chester Upland. Certainly the Philadelphia School District has had its fiscal woes as well.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. The governor's budget, curiously, barely addressed education. I mean, while there was a tiny increase, in fact, it was offset by a reduction in the program that funds pre-kindergarten and full-day kindergarten in most school districts, so we're likely to see cuts to that. There was no discussion at all of the distressed schools districts. Chester Upland is one. There are 16 others that are moving in that direction, and there are several that might not be able to make payroll before the end of the school year. And what the governor did was he took pains to express and to talk about the fact that federal money ran out, and that's why he had to cut the budget last year. But the reality is that hundreds of millions of dollars left of federal funds in education were not replaced with state money, but hundreds of millions of dollars in the corrections budget were replaced with state dollars. So the governor chose corrections over education, and frankly, the public schools are pretty much left to fester this year, and we're likely to see additional cuts and higher local property taxes because of it.
Well, Nate, I know you have written a little bit about the corrections issue and how it really has been level funded this time around. Do you think that's a good idea?
Yeah, and this is, you know, one of the differences between education and corrections in the state budget is that the education budget is basically set at whatever lawmakers want to set it at. If they wanted to increase it by $2 billion, they could. If they wanted to cut it by $2 billion, that's just a line item, and you know, it certainly has a ripple effect, but it's very discretionary, whereas corrections is determined by the number of people in prison, and this has gone up 500% in the last 30 years, the number of people in state prisons. That's why costs have skyrocketed in our corrections budget. But there are common sense reforms, and I think the governor's budget is starting to address some of these, and I think the corrections department itself is taking on some needed reforms to be able to reduce spending in corrections while reducing crime. And treating nonviolent offenders differently, and making some reforms that states like Texas and other states have done, that where they actually have reduced the need for prison beds and prison construction.
Yeah, Tracy, and this is something that I think we certainly agree with Nathan on the need for reform in the prison system, but you have to look at the way it was implemented. The corrections budget really is level funded, and there's a tiny amount of reduction for some of these reforms that could save tens or hundreds of millions of dollars. And you contrast that to higher education, where the cuts came immediately and the colleges were told to go figure it out. We would have liked to see more cuts in corrections. We'd like to see a swifter movement on the sentencing reforms and the other kinds of cost reductions in the prison system that are going to create real savings that should be reinvested in colleges and in public schools.
Well, and Nate, what about the argument that, hey, the more we invest in education, the less we're likely to have to invest in corrections later on?
Well, the question, though, is the quality of the education. It's not about spending more money. It's about better quality. And we have doubled education in the last 15 years in public school spending. Has doubled. And I think if you told Sharon or any of the education spending advocates that 15 years ago we're going to double education spending, they would applaud and say, yeah, that's going to fix all of the problems and the schools are going to be better. That hasn't happened. There's been some increases in performance, but not dramatically. When you look at the SAT or the national test, the NAEP, there really has not been any significant gains, which is why Commonwealth Nation has supported greater school choice, because school choice saves taxpayers money. It costs less to educate those students. The results have been clear from school choice that graduation rates have gone up, test scores have gone up, and when graduation rates go up, you're actually saving those students and giving them the lifeline they need to lead a better life and avoid the corrections costs and the welfare costs down the road.
Well, we could probably talk about any one of these topics for a full hour, but I want to make sure that we talk about the welfare system. The governor said that he was planning to right-size it, reducing the Department of Welfare's $10.5 billion budget through some cost-saving measures that he says will improve efficiency and increase accountability. Now, we know that the department did trim several hundred million dollars last year. Some people ended up being dropped from the rolls, and sometimes because of, you know, simple paperwork issues. Sharon, I'd like you to talk about that, and Nate as well, about the whole idea of right-sizing welfare and what might that ultimately look like.
Well, this is, Tracy, again, it's actually interesting because over the past number of years there have been a variety of initiatives that the Rendell administration has actually tried to implement that would have created efficiencies and cost savings. And, in fact, the General Assembly has rejected them, whether it was reductions in prescription drug prices or changes to nursing home payments or a variety of things that would rein in cost excesses in the provision of some of these services. So what we've seen with the governor in this budget is he's really done two things. The reduction, I mean, he's eliminated the general assistance program. That's about 67,000 very vulnerable adults, kids, domestic violence victims who get a very small stipend on a very temporary basis. And he's also proposed eliminating health care for a large number of that group. That certainly is not an efficiency at all, and it's not fraud. It's simply changing the rules and reducing benefits. The other thing that is the major cost saver in the budget has to do with the delivery of human services that the city of Philadelphia, and we heard the mayor talk about the impact of the budget on Philadelphia, but also the surrounding counties. The budget creates a block grant, and this is the problem with block grants. It's giving the counties 100% of the responsibility, but only 80% of the money. So we're likely to see cuts in services for intellectual disabilities, particularly as well for homeless services, which are now folded into this block grant. So we're not seeing efficiency. We're seeing reductions in services. And at the end, I mean, the reason why we have these programs and these services is that they actually save money in the long run. So we're cutting things now, but we're just increasing our costs down the road.
Nate, what do you say about that and about the block grants and the idea of giving a degree of autonomy to the different counties as to how that money gets spent rather than earmarking it specifically?
Yeah, I mean, the governor's budget basically combines a number of programs that go to county service agencies and combines them into one block grant that is a reduction in funding but gives the counties more flexibility in how they use that money. And surprisingly, a lot of the counties have come out in support of that. In fact, the County Commissioners Association, which is an association we don't often agree with, said, they appreciate that because with the greater flexibility, they can stretch those dollars farther and use them for what they see in their local communities. But overall, I would say that, you know, the changes in welfare in this budget are really tinkering around the edges. The big welfare program in the state is medical assistance. And when you look at state funding as well as the federal funding that comes into the state, we're spending $18 billion on medical assistance and long-term care. And that is far and away the largest part of the state budget and the biggest cost. And even if you cut that by even reduce that by 10%, you'd be saving almost $2 billion. And we think that's reasonable with reasonable reforms and overhauling that system. We, for instance, support moving towards a voucher system for Medicaid of helping people buy private insurance in the private market and reforming long-term care so that more individuals buy long-term care insurance and those that can afford to have the insurance covered themselves rather than relying on the government. Unfortunately, with the federal subsidies that come in, they've been tied to what's called maintenance of effort, which really limits the ability of the state to make significant changes in medical assistance and Medicaid spending. But that is really where the reforms have to happen in the future, and we need federal flexibility to do so and really to overhaul welfare as the governor kind of said he wanted to do and reprioritize that. It needs to go a lot farther in the coming years.
Well, go ahead, Sharon.
Yeah, I was just going to say, when we talk about welfare, and it's really a misnomer, the Department of Welfare really is the Department of Health Care. Most of the funding does go to health care services. And, frankly, it's funding that ends up in supporting local hospitals, particularly in both urban and rural areas. And, what we keep talking about, what we keep hearing about is savings, and it really is just cost shifting onto individuals. And, again, when that happens, the reality is that people don't get the health care they need, and they end up being sicker. So, again, we're spending money on this type of service because it saves money down the road.
Well, I want to move on because we certainly can't have a budget discussion without mentioning Marcella Shale. And, in fact, I'm going to go to the phones to Paul and welcome Paul to our conversation. Hi.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking the call. I just have on screen in front of me a thing here that tells me that 39 states do tax natural gas extraction. Pennsylvania doesn't. Alaska derives 65% of its revenues from those kinds of taxes. The excuse that corporations pay a corporate income tax doesn't hold up because other states have both types of taxes. And I hate to use words like no-brainer, but it seems like that's what it is when you have a budget shortfall. Rather than cutting financial aid to education, why not let these companies pay for what they're getting out of the state?
Well, Paul, thanks for your call. Nate, I'm going to ask you to go first on that one. And I guess we should mention that the idea of a fee was approved by the Senate, has to go through the House yet, so we're sort of waiting to see how that's going to shake out.
Yeah, and I just checked my Twitter feed to see if anything had happened on that this morning, but I think they're having press conferences now, and we'll come back in today. I would disagree with the caller in that you can't consider the overall tax burden. I think you have to look at Pennsylvania's overall tax burden and what these companies are paying in corporate income tax, personal income tax, sales tax, and other fees and so forth. A lot of states don't have a corporate income tax or don't have an personal income tax or have significantly lower rates. In fact, every state but Iowa has a lower corporate tax rate than Pennsylvania. And these companies are paying hundreds of millions, billions of dollars in state taxes. They are engaged with local communities in rebuilding the roads that they use. They've put hundreds of millions into that. And, of course, they are paying the actual owners of the land royalty payments and leasing fees to use the gas. We've estimated about $7 billion in payments to local landowners, farmers. This has helped save family farms, helped create immense wealth in the areas where shale drilling is going on. And so Sharon likes to use the word fair share, and they're not paying their fair share when she really means more. They want more out of this. But we think they are paying paying substantial costs. And the question is, with the impact fee debate, where we've weighed in, is are there costs of government that they are using that they're not paying for, and that any impact fee should be limited only to those costs and not used for a bunch of different programs that are completely unrelated to gas drilling.
Sharon, I got 45 seconds for your response before we go to a break.
Well, it's funny. The gas drillers actually expected to pay a severance tax or impact fee, and they had their own proposal, and the one that is currently being considered is actually less than the drillers had proposed. We thought that, Texas should be the model. Their drilling fee, their severance tax, goes to higher education and basic education. They have $24 billion in their public school trust fund and $12 billion in their college trust fund, and that's how they fund the rest of economic growth. Now, the drillers here are getting away. They're not paying what they would be paying in other states. There's tremendous impact in these local communities, and the General Assembly is just passing up an important opportunity to help fund economic development throughout the state with the drilling fee.
We are talking about Governor Corbett's proposed budget for next year. We're looking at it from different perspectives, and we'd love to hear your perspective as well at 888-477-9499. Radio Times will be back right after this.
Law can be an instrument of change. That's why the Widener Law Program is a practice-based legal education from a faculty of respected legal scholars and practitioners. Classroom learning is reinforced with hands-on experience through clinics, externships, trial simulations, and much more. And the Delaware campus, located in the heart of America's corporate capital and in close proximity to many of the nation's leading healthcare providers, is a place to focus on corporate and health law. Learn more at law.widener.edu. Widener Law supports WHYY.
I'm Marty Moscowain. It's the winter membership campaign here at WHYY. If you're a new listener, if you've never been a supporter, or your membership has lapsed, please take a few minutes and make a pledge of support to WHYY. That phone number is 1-888-345-9499, or you can pledge online at WHYY.org. On Radio Times, we find the guests, we host the conversations. Make a call, 1-888-345-9499. Thank you very much.
WHYY is supported by MacArthur Theater in Princeton, presenting The Convert, a new play by Denai Gurira, directed by Emily Mann through February 12th. A tale of heritage, history, and faith in 1890s Africa, The Convert is the story of a young girl forced to choose between her family's traditions and the Christian faith and Western values she has embraced. Tickets at 609-258-2787 or at MacArthur.org. MacArthur Theater in Princeton proudly supports WHYY.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowain. We're talking about Governor Corbett's proposed budget. It is a $27.1 billion plan that he describes as lean and demanding, but necessary to help get the state's finances in order. We have been looking at it both from the free market perspective and the working family perspective. Nate Benefield is with us. He's the Director of Policy Analysis for the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives. We're also talking with Sharon Ward. She's the Director of the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center. And I want to thank you both again because we have been covering a whole lot of ground here and we so appreciate your flexibility with this. And we want to invite our listeners to join in the conversation as well. The number is 888-477-9499. We have talked about education, the cuts to higher education in particular, also the block grants. We've talked about the welfare department and right sizing. We've talked a little bit about Marcella Shale as well. I want to talk about transportation. I thought it was interesting that the governor said this is not a budget item, this is just too big, and really is, in a sense, in a class by itself. We certainly know that the state's infrastructure is crumbling and that that is an area that needs a lot of attention. Nate, what do you say about transportation?
Well, I mean, it was, we had heard rumors that it might be in the budget address, and it wasn't. It certainly is something that I expect to be taken up over the course of this year, at least seeing a plan and having a discussion on that. But it is something that is beyond just more money and funding. That Pennsylvania is, you know, has among the worst infrastructure, but also has is a high spending state in terms of transportation spending. And what is going to have to be looked at not only is money for transportation, but how it's spent. There are bills now that have been discussed about using public-private partnerships. And you remember the Turnpike lease was a big talk of that. But what they're talking about now is public-private partnerships on new construction, building express lanes and new roads. And states that have done this, such as Florida and Texas and Virginia, have been able to utilize the private sector in that and get more infrastructure built for lower costs.
Hmm.
It's also going to talk about, you know, discussing the prevailing wage law, which sets the price of construction work on highways, and I think we need to readdress that to use our tax dollars more efficiently on transportation.
Hmm. So would it be safe to say, Nate, that that the Commonwealth Foundation would be a proponent of more private funds being used to address the transportation issue?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is, you know, private sector money and innovation that can be utilized in targeted areas where there are opportunities for public-private partnerships in new roads and new bridges.
Sharon?
Yeah, I think this is an area of real failure on the governor's part. There have now been two transportation studies that have laid out the problems, that have identified priority projects, and quite honestly, we're really missing an opportunity. Construction costs are about 25% lower because of the recession. Pennsylvania really could take advantage of this and actually get more roads for its dollars. So I think that really the governor's been dragging his feet on this. This is something that actually would create jobs as opposed to the tax cuts, which we're still waiting to see. And, you know, and Nate talks about the public-private partnerships. They've really been a mixed bag. I mean, a lot of what this is higher costs for individuals. And what we've seen in Virginia, what we've seen in Indiana, what we've seen in Chicago with these privatization of some of these roadways is simply higher prices for consumers and users, and actually less attention to repairs and infrastructure. So we'd just like to see it move forward relatively quickly.
Speaking of that, do we have any idea what kind of time frame we're looking at for transportation to be really taken up in a serious way, Sharon?
I think the administration tends to focus on one major issue at a time, so I can't imagine we're going to see anything before the end of March.
Hmm. Nate, would you agree?
I mean, if I was betting on when things were rolling out, I would lose a lot of money. it's very tough to say. And, you know, the big thing that's going to be taking up a lot of attention in Harrisburg is not so much the budget, but the redistricting, with the court saying the redistricting plan was unconstitutional. That's thrown everyone into disarray, wondering, you know, what districts are going to run on, if they, you know, need to postpone the primary, you know, how they're going to draw the district lines. So that is really, I think, going to consume a lot of the oxygen and the political attention in Harrisburg, and not so much some of the policy issues.
Hmm. Well, I want to go to the phones. We're going to go to King of Prussia and bring Warren in on our conversation. Hi, Warren. Welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you, Tracy. Yes, my question for your guest is, with education starving for cash and the state, I don't believe that they're cutting any money that's going into the prison systems, you know, both juvenile and adult, what is going to be done to correct this? Because if you don't keep the kids off the streets and they start committing crimes, you're going to have to pay for it on the back end in prisoning.
Well, Warren, thank you for...
I'll take the answer off the air.
Okay. I believe we did touch on that a little bit earlier in the conversation, but I'll ask our guests to summarize their response to that.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to say that, you know, we've seen what the governor's kind of transformative agenda is, and it really is one in which our schools are underfunded. And, I think Nate agrees that there's a tremendous amount of evidence that if you don't educate kids, it's bad for kids, it's bad for the economy. So what we're going to need to see is a balanced approach, which we have not seen. We're now in 5 years of cuts at the state level. You know, there needs to be more attention to raising revenue, whether it's efficiencies, and I think efficiencies in the prisons are a good idea, but it's also things like closing the corporate tax loopholes. The governor proposed a small step in closing a discount that vendors that collect sales tax are able to keep. When you pay sales taxes now, actually the person who collects the sales tax keeps a piece of that. The governor has proposed putting a cap on that. So again, we're starting to see some revenue measures come in. We think that we need to take a balanced approach and look to that side and not just to the cut side.
Hmm. And Nate, anything you can add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would disagree with the caller and Sharon's, her term of adequately funding. You know, we have poured more and more resources into our public schools, and we're spending, $14,000 per student in public schools. What we need to do is spend education dollars more efficiently through school choice and other opportunities to improve the quality of the education. In terms of the corrections within this, this budget, it's very difficult to cut correction spending in just one swoop and cut the spend number without just letting lots of prisoners out. But we absolutely need systemic reform to change that system. So we do reduce future spending while protecting our citizens and reducing the crime rate.
Hmm. I'm Tracy Matisak in for Marty Moscowane, and you're listening to Radio Times on WHYY.
And thanks for listening to Radio Times on WHYY. As Tracy just said, I'm Chris Satullo, Vice President for News here at Pledge Central, with Liz Fiedler, one of the great energetic reporters in the WHYY newsroom. And we'll be talking to you periodically over the next 2 hours of Radio Times. And we have a big and exciting challenge for this two-hour period of Radio Times, Liz. Nick and Dr. Jan Goldman are challenging all you out there to support WHYY during this segment of Radio Times. If we raise 100, that's 100 pledges today by noon, about an hour and 10 minutes from now, Nick and Dr. Jan Goldman will give WHYY an additional $2,500. So that works out to an additional $25 per pledge. That's a way, Liz, to make your money go further.
That sounds good, and I have good news about that, and I have other news. The good news is this is a generous offer from Nick and Dr. Jan Goldman. The other news is so far we have 14. We have 14 members toward the 100-member goal, which means now is your chance. Now is your opportunity to give us a call and become a member of WHYY. Support us during our winter membership campaign. The number is 1-888-345-9499 or go online to whyy.org. We're listening to another great Radio Times program today with Tracy Matysak talking about the budget yesterday. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett obviously laid out his budget address, some cuts, some keeping spending level for some programs, and some Lincoln University is one. It's a really interesting topic, and this is your opportunity to show your support for this program.
And Liz, you've been working on doing some reporting for us on that topic, on the budget, looking at the effect on higher education, and today on K-12 education. It's true generally that the journalists in WHYY benefit tremendously from having Radio Times be part of the operation. Frequently, the person we want to talk to when we want to talk to them is sitting in Studio 2 with Marty. So we listen in. Liz has been known to tackle people in the hallway on their way out with her microphone to get an additional quote. But that's part of the notion of the overall strength of team here at WHY, what we offer you in terms of the latest of the breaking news locally, nationally, and globally. Then the opportunity for 2 hours every day from 10 to noon to sit down with Marty or, you know, as it was today with her great substitute host, Tracy Matysak, and really delve into issues, get some nuance, get some depth, get different voices. If you appreciate the kind of depth, sophistication, nuance, and civility that Marty and her staff at Radio Times bring to the in-depth discussion of issues, the way to say thanks and the way to make sure it keeps going and the way to help us meet this great challenge from Nick and Dr. Jan Goldman is to call 1-888-345-9499. That's 1-888-345-WHYY.
And I was really enjoying listening to this last hour of Radio Times. Obviously, you know, this is something that I listened to the governor's budget address yesterday. I read all of the emails and folders and the briefings. I read all of this stuff. And still, listening to this, I'm learning so much. And it's a great the way that Tracy's putting together some of the pieces, bringing out other things. They mentioned the redistricting plan, obviously, and how that's going to be keeping lawmakers busy, talking about transportation funding. How soon could we see that happen? It's an education. You get to sit here for an hour. Tracy, Marty, whoever is hosting the show and their guests really guide you through it. I love when callers, you know, really bring up totally new angles or have really strong opinions that guide the conversation. That's why you're listening. That's why you value WHYY and Radio Times. That's why you're tuning in. That's why you get excited at 10 a.m. when you know Radio Times is going to be on and you turn on your dial to WHYY. Now, step up. Now let us know that you value WHYY and you want us to be here and you want us to be strong across the Delaware Valley. The number is 1-888-345-9499 or whyy.org.
That's right, Liz. And you make a really important point when you were talking about the fact that you as the listener can be a participant and even a guide to the conversation that happens during Radio Times. Now, we love what we do reporting the news, but frankly, basically we have about 5 to 7 minutes each hour to say what's going on in the region. So of necessity, what we do in order to get as many of the headlines and the main points and the main news breaks in is tell you as briefly, as concisely, as crisply as possible what's going on. We have a little more time every night on Newsworks Tonight, our relatively new news magazine that's on from 6 to 6:30. But even then, we can't possibly get into the kind of depth that Marty and her staff and her guests and her callers can get into on a daily basis every day. Why is it that Marty Moskowane has been there for 25 years doing 2 hours of live radio every day, quality, in-depth, one of the most remarkable performances in all of radio, all of media? How has that happened? That happens because of you, because of your support to WHYY and particularly to Radio Times. You are the people who give us the resources to give Marty the time and the production help, her great team of producers that books the guests, does the briefing books, which Marty plows through every night at home or on the way in on the train. All of that happens because of you. And now we have this great opportunity to really boost what's going on with Radio Times through this challenge from Nick and Dr. Jan Goldman. Your calls not only help in the money you pledge, but if we get 100 pledges in the next hour and 5 minutes, we're going to add $2,500 to the total due to the generosity of Nick and Dr. Jan Goldman. I'm sure they're listening. I'm sure they're rooting. They want to hear those rings and pings. Make them happy. Make them, frankly, fork over. 1-888-345-9499. That's 1-888-345-WHYY. Or always online, safely and securely, WHYY.org.
And our goal is 100 members by noon, and we just got an update. We have 19 so far, and it was good to hear the phones ringing, so I bet we're past 19. You be the next caller, 1-888-345-9499. Oh, look, we're up at 23. Thank you for those calls. Thank you for your membership. You be the next caller, 1-888-345-9499. Help us get to our goal of 100. And in addition to the great work of Radio Times, we've been busy over in the newsroom these last few months. And as you mentioned, NewsWorks tonight, we're growing, we're expanding in the newsroom. Everybody over there is always working hard, bringing in new ideas, and trying to put really important, really valuable material on the air, working really hard to make stories relevant, digging a little bit deeper, looking at some of the impact of the budget cuts. And that's why you're listening. That's why you count on WHYY. That's why you wake up to WHYY in the morning, why you have it on in the background while you're working at home, making dinner, whatever it may be. Give us a call and let us know that you value what you hear when you turn on WHYY. 1-888-345-9499. I have a comment here. Paul from Audubon says, we need a solid outlet for solid news and information. Thank you for all you do at WHYY and NPR. Thank you, Paul, for your comment. And you can join Paul and all the other supporters of WHYY by giving us a call.
That's right, Liz. You know, I think one of the things that Marty and Radio Times does so well is to look not just at what's happening in the news, but tell you about the ideas that are driving the news, or sometimes the ideas that are about to make news. That's also what we're trying to do more of in the newsroom. We just got done with a series that we opened the year with called Just You Wait, which was a series of stories that we're basically telling you about the ideas that were going to drive the news, we think, in 2012, and also just names, people, trends, thoughts that we think you're going to hear a lot about in the coming year. And we've already sort of hit some home runs with a few of them. Liz, you did a couple. You did one about the Internet of Things. What's the Internet of Things?
The Internet of Things, the idea that all of these, that things in our lives would be connected via sensors. You could, you know, have your coffee maker set to start brewing coffee right when you turned off your alarm clock, things like that. Your refrigerator could communicate with you from a distance if you're going to the grocery store.
If only my refrigerator could communicate, don't eat that. That's a bad idea.
Stop. You don't really want to do
exactly.
It. Yeah, we had Dave Davies did a great one about super PACs. I mean, we have so many great reporters here. We are so lucky to have this newsroom. We are so lucky to have Radio Times here in this building. Give us a call and let us know that you are glad Radio Times is here. You are glad the news staff is working hard.